What's up, everybody? My name is Stephanie Walsh. This is Side B Radio, the podcast. And this week, I'm so excited because it finally happened. You guys would know about the finally part of this, but my friend John Arthur Green, he's a Broadway actor, he's a musician, he is an amazing human being, and I have been trying for a long time now to get our schedules aligned so that we could have an interview for Side B. And, you know, now that we're all still in day 5,860 of quarantine, I hit John up and I said, "Hey man, how about doing the show?" And he said, "Let's do it." So I have this really fantastic conversation John and I had for you to listen to. I don't want to take up too much, you know, pre-interview time and talk to you, but I hope everybody's staying safe. I hope everyone's still, you know, doing what you need to do, and you're being diligent and you're being smart. And it's unfortunate that we are still in quarantine. Happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers out there. And that's what today is, that this episode is airing, is Mother's Day. John actually mentions he has a show tonight at 8 p.m. on Rockwood Music Hall's Facebook Live. You can watch John perform after listening to this interview. Olaf's being a little noisy right now. He was oddly not at all during the interview, so there's a first. You're not really going to hear my doggo while I was talking to John. I hope that you guys enjoy this conversation, and I will talk to you at the end of it. John Arthur Green, Broadway musician, amazing person. Want to introduce yourself to the Side B Radio audience?
What's up, Side B Radio audience? My name is John Arthur Green, and I'm very happy to be here.
I've been asking John to do this show for years, I think. I think it's safe to say, like,
One or two, I would think, yeah.
But it's cool. I mean, finally, our schedule's aligned, right?
Here we are.
No other reason not to. So before, what were you doing before we all got sentenced to our apartments?
Wow. So I'm currently in the Broadway company of company. Stephen Sondheim's Revival with Marian Elliott and Patti LuPone, Katrina Link, and a slew of other incredible performers who round out the cast. So I was the standby for 5 lead males and the dance captain and fight captain. So I was pretty busy. And we had just finished, I think, our third, maybe even fourth week of previews, or we were, that Sunday was supposed to be our opening. So it was a little bittersweet, and it is what it is. But yeah, I was doing that show and gearing up for this whole concert series that I have coming up this year.
Which has also been postponed.
Allegedly, you know what I mean?
And so company, as far as you know, it's still like full steam ahead once you guys get the permission to reopen,
From what we have heard from producers and from our director and our staff, yes, that is the goal. But with that being said, I have to be reasonable in every sense of the word and say, you know, we don't know. We are literally in the unknown right now, and I think that that's scary. It's also empowering. And I think that it gives us a chance to say, okay, how can we look at pandemics or any type of disaster situation better? And how can we prepare for it better in the future? And how can we be ready and able and, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure you've thought about it. What do you think theater looks like post quarantine? They were certainly not going to be able to like sit.
Well, I actually haven't thought about it, to tell you the truth. Huh. I love my job and I love theater, but my biggest thing is just being able to see people, period. Mm-hmm. So I think that this new normal, we don't really know what it's going to be. And live events right now are very unprotected because you are very close proximity. You're packed in together. You're all sharing the same air, the same space, and it's a very limited amount of space. So I think that as a producer, you can't open a show at half capacity and still pay your weekly salaries and your weekly nut. I don't think that's possible. It's also stupid. So whether or not it becomes something of, I don't know. It could go many ways. That Broadway 4D has been dying to come in for years. And, right now, I'm hopeful for the future in the sense of I think that we will find. I think that COVID-19 is not going to kill us all. I do not think that it's going to take down the human race. I think that it is, you know what I mean? Like, and it is scary. It is something that is deadly and is harmful. But, and everybody is susceptible, no matter what color you are, no matter where you live, no matter what you do, no matter how much money you have in the bank, nothing. You can get this and die from it. And, you could also get this and survive. You could also not get it ever. But so I think that our new normal, it's too unknown. And I could hypothesize with you all day long. But for me, I want to get to a place where at the end of the day, everybody is safe. So whether or not that means we don't go back to Broadway until 2021, that is a very serious reality. And even once that comes back, who's to say? I mean, yeah, I'm not going to hypothesize anymore, but I think that there will be some type of new norm, and I don't know what it is, and I'm interested to see what it is. I think that will be a cool thing for performers to learn how to adapt, and I think that's what's cool about performers is that we can adapt. And you throw us into a situation, and we go, oh, okay, well, how can we look at this from all angles and make it better? So I'm excited to rise to the occasion and to bring stories to people as soon as I can and in whatever capacity I have to. I think that I think people are scared because they might have to learn a new skill. And I think that what's terrifying to people is something that they think they're good at. They're like, well, this is what I do, but that's also not who you are. You know what I mean? And
Yeah, for
so
sure.
as humans, we are put on this earth to evolve. Actually, we're put on this earth to live and die. That is it. But hopefully we have a higher level of thinking and a higher calling that we can and a higher power that we can hold on to and grasp onto that helps us evolve and learn and grow. And that is life. When you stay stagnant, I think too many people in this world have been stagnant and been staying comfortable for so long, right? And
Oh
I
yeah,
think
this
that
was
this
like a forced
COVID-19
reset.
And it's terrifying because a reset for us when it comes to money or technology or when it comes to this, we never had to deal with that in our generation. But my grandmother used to sew $100 bill in every single one of her bras. Every single one. There was a $100 bill in every single one. And I remember being in a grocery store and watching her cut one out and giving it to the lady. And I was like, what just happened? You got money sewn into your clothes? But she went through the Great Depression. You
Because
know
you
what I
never
mean?
know.
And you never do. My grandfather used to bury wads of cash, not $100 bills, but wads of cash in coffee tins in his backyard.
I mean, I've
Just
seen
dig
that
up a
like on
hole.
TV. I've never seen an actual person do that.
The my ancestors,
Yeah,
these
just
some
like the people who put
country
the money, like
folk.
stuff it in the mattresses and stuff. I
We
don't know
never
anyone
stuff it
who
in the
did that.
mattresses, but yeah, like
No, you
it's.
buried it in the backyard.
They buried it in the backyard and sewed it into their clothes.
Nice. So you were talking about your concert series that you want to do at some point. And you are such a great musician. Like I've seen you in
Oh my
concert
gosh,
more than
thank you
I've
so
seen
much.
you on stage, like on Broadway. But I have seen your Broadway stuff. And I saw you as Jack Kelly down in Florida, which was phenomenal.
Thank you.
So, want to talk about some of your new music a little
I would love to. Yeah,
bit?
music has always been something that has been such a beautiful, powerful driving force for me, and I think that it can transcend us to a place that allows us to think outside of our own self. And what I wanted to do I wanted to cultivate a movement of feeling through music. And for me, what I'd been listening to on the radio, although fun bops, like, cool, yeah, like, ah, let's go, it's nice. Throw the windows down, maybe do a workout to this. This is good. At the end of the day, I had realized like what I was listening to was actually informing what I was thinking about. And so I was listening to all of these different songs that really had no meaning, you know? They weren't saying something. And I'm always about a message, right? And I think that if you've got a platform, your platform and your responsibility is to bring a message. And so that's what I try to do with my music. And I try to allow a place for people to feel what they've buried or what they've closed off for so long. That's what I feel about my music. But I got, speaking of things, I've got some songs that are coming out pretty soon. I'm releasing some singles just to get them out and be done with them. Because I've been holding on to them for so long. And then I wrote a musical. This is my third musical that I've written. It's called Fork in the Road. And I'm going to be doing a song selection of that at 54 Below in August, which is part of the concert series this year. Which I was really excited about because... I've never been this dark and gritty with a show, and I actually think it's gonna be more of a film, kind of like a once thing, because it's literally like Requiem for a Dream, like that dark and gritty kind of side of New York City, of the underbelly of New York, you know, that's still reality, and like once this like musician thing with a couple. So I'm interested to see how it'll play out, but. I still have not heard all of it on its feet or seen anything. I've never even heard the whole thing read with other people except for like two other people. You know, so it's like I'm interested, and it's still in the very beginning stages, so it could morph into something completely different. Yeah, so.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm rambling now. But I have a show this Sunday on Mother's Day. I'm doing a live show for Rockwood, actually. It's one of the venues that you've seen me at. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Rockwood's one of my favorites.
It's a good one. It's a good spot. Oh.
So what else are you doing in quarantine? I've seen you pop up on some Instagram lives once in a while.
I've done some lives. I'm writing a lot.
Yeah.
I'm writing a lot. I'm cooking a lot. I love to cook, so I'm making a lot of.
Do you have a favorite thing
like,
you've been cooking?
This last, I just made a rack of lamb with a
wow.
with a maple sugar coffee crusted rub on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that slapped. I was a lot in the air fryer. So it was
wow
ridiculous. And I've never made them, so I was very very happy that they turned out that way. It was delicious.
It's awesome. Yeah, I got some like stuff. I went to the store on Saturday. I got a couple things that I'm like, I'll try to be a little more creative this week, because I've just been like sticking to like staples. You know, like I know how to do this. It's quick. It's easy. I haven't been so creative.
Of course.
But I mean, now's kind of the time.
Now's the time. You have the time. It's funny because it's like I'll wake up and I'll do my routine in the morning, and I'll do my readings and my journaling and take Sherlock on his walk and do a little workout. And when I sit with my coffee and I'm doing some of my journaling, I'm always like, well, what do I want to make tonight? And that's fun for me to be like, oh, snap.
Yeah.
Then I get to look in the fridge and say, what do I have? And, you know, make it up from there.
Yeah, somebody just posted like really easy fried pickle recipe, like very simple, quick fried. And I was like, I have those pickle slices like for sandwiches. So
fry.
Those could be fried.
Fry them. Let's
I'm gonna
go.
Give it a try, I think.
Because it's like a pickle chip, but a pickle.
Yeah.
Long chip.
Well, I've had, yeah. It'll be like
a long pickle chip?
Yeah. I could probably cut them too. Like,
don't cut them.
Keep just
long.
Make long.
It's like fries. a plantain.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, enjoy it. Don't let somebody come for you on that. Yeah, don't let somebody ruin your joy when it comes to fried food at all.
I don't really fry stuff like, I mean, sometimes I'll do like chicken cutlets and things like that, but I'm not too adventurous that way. But like I said, it was like a cup of flour, some pepper, mix it together, put it on the pickles.
Simple.
And just go. And I was like, that seems really easy. And I have all the ingredients, so give it a whirl.
Super simple. It is. Love it. I'm so into it, 100%.
So, you're in Manhattan, right?
Yes, I am in the heart of Manhattan.
How nuts is it right now? Is it like just super crazy ghost town all the time, or?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, in the mornings and at night, it's dead. Throughout the day, things do have to run. There are quite a lot of stores that are open. And everybody's really being pretty good about the social distancing stuff in the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I think that when it comes to parks, those are the things where, I mean, I've seen, I saw some pictures of the pier the other day. I rode my bike through Central Park and ended up a 7 mile run the other day, and I actually ended up having to go outside of the park to get around
Oh my
people. And
gosh.
I mean, I still had my mask on and everything, but
Yeah.
it seemed a little trite that I was like, why are we doing that?
Yeah,
You know what I mean?
no, and like yesterday was a beautiful day. We're recording this on Monday. Just so Sunday was, it was like 80 degrees. It was gorgeous. When I took the dog out, I was like, "Oh, we should walk over to the park." And then I was like, "No, we shouldn't because
No.
everyone's over there and probably not abiding by the rules." So I stayed
And it's
home.
just like it's not worth it at that point. You know, if you're
Right.
if you know something's gonna be there, it's like if you know that stove is hot, but
Right.
you really want to touch it,
Exactly.
and you know you're gonna get burned and like badly, and you still touch it, that is your fault.
Exactly. That's why I just and like even like Olaf
That
was
is
kind of pulling
nobody's
in the
fault.
direction of my dog's name is Olaf, sorry. Pulling towards the park and I was like, "Nah, man.
I've
It's gonna
never
be
heard of that
crowded."
name. Where's it from? Is it a
Actually, no, it's a whole
In
story.
summer.
My one of the last things I did with my sister before she passed, we saw Frozen together that December, the previous December. And from she passed the following July. So we saw the movie and but between that, we had lost both of our bulldogs that were down that lived with her. So she was like, "I'm ready. I want to get a puppy. It's gonna be a white bulldog and I'm gonna name him Olaf." And we were like, "Okay, that sounds great." And then she died. So my mother was like, "Thank God she didn't get a puppy. I wouldn't be able to deal with this
Right.
and take care of a dog." But about a year and a half later, my mom said she was ready for a dog. And I just went online, and there was near her a French bulldog, white, and the breeder had named it Olaf. So
Wow.
I sent her the link and I was like, "I think this is your dog." And that's him. So
That's amazing.
that's why his name
Aren't
is
those beautiful
Olaf.
stories the things that like allow us to heal in so many ways? And I think they're
Yeah.
like gifts from
Absolutely.
whatever you believe, heaven or a past
Oh
life
yeah,
or
my sister
whatever.
wanted
And
my
they
mom to have
just
this dog.
they're
Like
like, but you know, even for us too, like they're like, here's a nugget. Here's just like a small thing for you to say. You know, I love you. I'm here. Remember, I still love you. That's beautiful, man. I love that.
Yeah, so and then, I got him because I lost my mother, which is how I ended up in Jupiter, Florida to see you in your production of How did you end up in Jupiter, Florida?
Strangely enough, I was in first off, I love you, and I'm sorry for all that
Thank you.
loss. You
I
know
didn't
I
mean to
know
like I didn't mean to bring it that
no.
way, but
Stop. That's not you're not bringing it anyway. It's just we're st I'm stopping to acknowledge and to be real for a second. But that's it. Like I understand loss very well,
know.
and I just I'm sorry for it for you, for
Believe me,
anyone,
it was
but
such a wonderful thing that you were down there. Because I
yeah.
was down there and then I was like, my friend came down to keep me company while I was
Yeah.
finishing up, and then I said, I was like, "I don't know if this is weird of me, but should we go see John in Newsies?" And she was like, "Yeah, why not?" And then my mother's best friend was like, "Your mother would want you to go have like a nice night, go see your friend." So we did, and it was awesome.
So I was in Washington State, singing with the Tacoma Symphony, doing a West Side, a Leonard Bernstein centennial concert
Okay.
with a 45-piece orchestra, and it was incredible. And my buddy Marcos, who Marcos Santana, who we did West Side together in Europe, he called me and he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm in Seattle right now doing a concert with a symphony." And he goes, "Okay. I need you to play Jack Kelly for me." Said, "I'm sorry." And he goes, "I need you to play Jack Kelly. I need you." And I said, "All right, give me the dates. And he gave me the dates, and I sent them immediately to my company manager. I didn't even look at them. I was at School of Rock at the time. And I just sent them. And she sent me a message back, and she said, okay. I said, you guys are approving this leave of absence? She goes, yeah. I go, okay. So I called Marcos. I got on a flight home to New York. I finished the concert. Can you imagine? I just left the concert. Yeah. Bye, guys! Go. I finished the concert. I got on a plane, flew back to New York for like 3 hours, packed my bag, and then flew to Jupiter, Florida. And yeah, it was a godsend because he needed me. Somebody, they had cast somebody else because I wouldn't have been able to do it anyways because I was on School of Rock. But it was an emergency thing, and I stepped in for him, and we had a great time. And he really, as a director, trusted me, and I trusted him explicitly as a director. He's a real actor's director, which is really cool, and because he's such an incredible actor and the dancer himself and performer, he commands respect just in his presence being there. It's quite astonishing to watch. So anyway, I loved that production, and I was one of the original Spot Collins, right? And like the last workshop and readings they did before they took it out to actually mount it, I was Spot Collins. So I love
that. Wow, you would be such a different, like, because you know, all I picture when I hear Spot Collins, not even the one from the movie anymore, it's Tommy Bracco.
Yeah, it's Tommy. But the thing is like Spot was in the first act and in the second act. Spot used to have this huge thing, and Brooklyn's Here was like a 6 minute song.
Yeah. Wow.
It was crazy. And it was a rock song. Constantine Maroulis did it before me.
Stop it.
No lie. The very first reading, Constantine played Spock.
Well, I can understand why they made a change there, though, because the Newsboys are supposed to be teenagers.
Yeah, I know. But that, you know, listen, doesn't matter how old he is, that dude slaps. That voice.
Isn't that how we became, like, you and I got to know each other? Because I saw you and then he was there and you were like, oh, he's a buddy of mine. I was like, okay, got it.
That makes sense. That makes sense. At that Rockwood concert.
Yes. I saw you because Seth Folk was drumming for you. Yeah. And I knew Seth. So we were like, let's go see Seth tonight. And then you were the singer. And we were like, oh my God, who's this guy? And then I turned around and there was Constantine. And I was like, all right, cool.
That was a really great, that night was really special. That was a really beautiful show. That was just an acoustic show with me and Seth, and he played the cajon that night. So we weren't doing, I think Matt Roden sang with me as well.
That was, I know exactly when this was because I saw Lazarus that afternoon.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I went to the matinee of Lazarus, and then we went, like, I was with my friend, and since we were in the city, I was like, what else can we do tonight? What's going on? And
what else can I do to my heart tonight? Oh, yeah, I'm going to go see Jonathan Green.
It was 1 week before David Bowie passed away, because I saw the show, I saw Lazarus the week before he died. And obviously that means a lot to me. You know, I mean, I feel like we've mentioned, I love David Bowie to death, so.
Never heard of him. Just kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine.
He was this guy, I don't know, a while back. He had a couple hits, I think. I don't know.
One or two, maybe. Maybe. Allegedly.
So these shows that you're doing, May 10th, I'm assuming, like, it's not physical. We can go see you at Rockwood. Is it on their website?
Oh, 100%.
Like,
you can show up. 1,000%, yeah.
What?
Really? Come on.
So is it home?
It is live. It is live from my living room.
Gotcha.
It will
on
be
on their website, though? Or?
It will be on their Facebook Live.
Okay. Gotcha.
At 8 o'clock p.m. on Sunday. Sunday, May 10th, 8 p.m.
That
and she airs
airing?
This on, like, she airs
no,
this, on, like,
this should
Monday.
Be airing
she airs on
Sunday.
Monday, May 11th.
No, this should. Yeah. This will be live at midnight on May, like, the morning of May 10th. So John has a show tonight. Go.
I have a show tonight, right now, 8 p.m. Plug it. Rockwood.
It'll be someone be listening at 7:59 and be like, oh, go stop listening to the podcast. Just go.
And this show is going to be a Mother's Day show. It's going to be a song done acoustically, and it's going to be just me. It's not going to be the band. But it's going to be I'm going to do an accumulation of old songs, new songs, and I'm actually going to do a couple of covers, which I never do. I know.
Well, last time we saw each other in person, actually it wasn't too long before the whole quarantine thing. You were at that Broadway Sings Queen, which was,
it was
so much fun.
Corey Mock does an incredible job, and that entire production staff, the Broadway Sings crew is really great. And I was supposed, this is my first performance with them. I was supposed to do, my induction was supposed to be Bruno Mars, where I was supposed
did
to
you
sing
have a song in mind?
Grenade. I was supposed to sing Grenade. And then I got sick like the day of, or something, or I couldn't, I was not able to do it. And so somebody else sang it. And then they asked me to do it again, the Bruno Mars again, like a year later. And again, I couldn't do it. And I was like, So this is the first one I was able to do. And this was probably the hardest song, I think, that anybody could have chosen for me to do.
Yeah.
So
when you came out to, I was like, this is the song choice. And then you crushed it.
I didn't choose it. I didn't choose it. Trust me. My song choices were already taken. And mostly because those people had, you know, either sung them on a television show and are known for that, or, you know, something else.
So basically you were trying to like rock, paper, scissors, Constantine to sing Bohemian Rhapsody.
No, actually, Somebody to Love, actually Rachel Potter, Somebody to Love is like the song that I do. I've been doing that for 10 years now in New York. And the first one was with the Broadway Dreams Kids, the Broadway Dreams Foundation. I sang a concert with them for Rockers on Broadway in 2012 and maybe 2009. It was a long time ago, 2010. And I sang Somebody to Love, and that just, it, for me, it became kind of a staple of mine that people knew me for. And it's like that and Gethsemane, people. And now my, the Creep that I did, I don't know if you've seen that version of Creep that I did online. Oh, snap. Now she gets to go look.
I will. And you know that I will. You know I'm good for it.
But I also feel like, I find like with, it's hard for me because I like writing my own music, but I find that people gravitate more towards interpretation. And I think that one of my strengths is being an interpreter and a translator. So I think that being able to interpret a song differently than how anybody else can do it, I think that is something that I try to bring to the table because I want it to be fresh. I don't want to do it like them. They did it. I can't do it like them. They wrote it and they performed it and they're fucking incredible. So I'm not going to do it justice. But what I can do is I can take my heart and my spirit and what I know, and I can apply it and make it applicable to me and see if that translates to somebody else. And so with my songs, when I sing other people's tunes, that's what I try to do. And I try to embody what that is fully. And to a fault almost, you know? But I find that, what else have I, what other songs? Hallelujah, I did with Drew Angus and Sean Randall.
I've benefit. Seen you do that in concert.
Yeah, we did a benefit recording of that where every $100 we raise through the recording, we donate a guitar. There's a company that does it. They donate a guitar to a kid who can't afford it. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. It's really dope.
Yeah, I think he showed up at the bitter end.
With Drew Angus. Yeah, it was a Christmas show.
Yes. It was beginning of December. Yeah.
It was a Christmas show.
Because we went out after. I remember that night pretty well.
How? You went out with me and you remember the night?
I think that's why, because I think it was like, oh my gosh, so much drinking.
we get after it after a show for sure. It was a really fun night.
Me and my buddy went with you and a bunch of people.
It's always interesting. Like after one of my shows, I have the most authentic New York experiences. Like I do. I end up, you know, having random conversations with people on the street, whether
they're met a few outside people, I remember
smoking a cigarette or whatever they're doing. Like people just gravitate towards me to talk. They just want to talk. And I'm like, why? I didn't even say, I didn't invite this. This is not.
Yeah, no, I, there was, at one point outside of, I can't remember the name of the place, but we had a hard time finding it because we took a bunch of us took Ubers from the Bitter End over to this other place. And then we were outside and I think some people were like smoking and some super random person walked up, but they had the craziest story and they were just telling you, like you, we were all around, but they were focused on you and everybody else was kind of like, what the hell is happening?
And I was just engaged.
Yep.
That's the thing that I find so interesting about this city, though, is like, and about this world, like, we get one shot at this life. And how selfish and how isolating it is for us to think that our time is so precious mm-hmm. for us that we can't give it away to somebody else who is begging for it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that dude has not been able to tell that story to somebody, and that's the only thing he needed to do before he could go to sleep. And maybe he hasn't slept in 2 days. Like, I don't know.
Or he was just drunk and having a good time, too.
Yeah, maybe he was just drunk and he was like, oh, look, this is a guy I want to tell this story to about my mom dying. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that, man. You know, whatever. People just tell me things, and I think it might be because I...
You are an open...
I'm an open spirit.
Yes.
Yeah.
There, I mean, you know, there's like how people say like resting bitch face or you look intimidating. You don't seem intimidating. You seem like a friendly guy. And normally, like, especially when you're out, like, having a good time, you are open to like just, hey, you want to come with us? Come over here. Have a drink. Like, you do that. So.
Like, that's what that's what this life is about. It's about inclusion. And you know, I don't ever want to be with... I don't ever want to look... I don't ever want to be that person on the other side of the glass
mm-hmm.
happening to get out. I don't. Like, I'll break that motherfucker down and let's go. I'll get cut up. Let's do it. That's what life's about. You need some scars. Like, that makes you stronger. And, you know, let's go. Let's keep moving forward. It's my favorite line from I think it's Pixar. It might be Disney. What is just keep swimming. Like from
Dory,
and
Finding Nemo, yeah.
Finding Nemo, what she says, like that to me is the most incredible line in the world, and it formulates so many things. But it's true, no matter what it is, no matter what you're going through, just keep swimming.
Yeah.
Just keep your eye on the prize and keep going, whatever that is.
Absolutely. So you were saying that you don't like to do covers because you need to make it your own or whatever, and I agree with that because who needs to hear a karaoke version of a song? Doesn't really matter. But if you have like for a concert and you're doing like a Broadway showcase, what are your go-to like Broadway, like you sing these songs or that you want to sing that you maybe haven't yet?
Well, that also depends. So like when I'm doing a Broadway concert, like a cabaret, I also write a show. So I write a script to it. And usually it goes hand in hand with kind of like my life and the things that I have, the shows that I have done. But I love a big number. Mm-hmm. Love a big number, but my staples are Gethsemane. My staple, that's a staple. People know me for Gethsemane. People know me for my superstar, but anything that I did from Superstar, Heaven's on Their Minds, Gethsemane. Santa Fe is still a big one. I do a version of Magic to Do that is, that I started my Joe's Pub show 1.5 million years ago. And that's a pretty cool staple. I love doing that. I don't know. Are you asking me like what songs I would do like now? Like if I had a show to put together, what songs would I do? Or are you asking me like
sure.
what?
Favorite Broadway shows, songs to sing, show tunes to sing.
Oh, man. anything Frank Wildhorn, because I love to sing high and it's passionate. Anything Frank Wildhorn. I love Stephen Schwartz. Lost in the Wilderness. Come on. Go the Distance? What? So many songs. But I also love things that a lot of people don't associate me with. I love classics, you know? I love big, big, beautiful classics. If Ever I Would Leave You. Fanny from Fanny. I love the Sondheim songs. I'm just a sucker for music, so you can't ask me that. Adam Gettle, like, let's go. Craig Carnelia. Like I love all of these composers. Jason Robert Brown, I would sing every day of my life if he would let me sing his music.
Did you see that Ariana Grande sang
I did.
Still Hurting? Okay.
Yeah.
Did you see that her fans were all going, "Wait, who's Jamie? What did Jamie do to you? Why are you?" They didn't know the song. And they were like, "What happened with Ariana and Jamie?" I feel like that's sad. I feel like people need to educate themselves.
And I'm sure that they will at some point. But when you have a 5-year-old fan, I mean, that, how can
you? Well, I don't think the 5-year-old is the one tweeting what happened to Jamie.
you might be surprised.
Yeah, maybe.
No, but still, like I you know, that Ariana Grande's status of fame is so weird.
Yeah,
like just because like the idea of that being that famous is mm-hmm. so weird.
Yeah, I can't. Jason Robert Brown posted like the text that he asked her, "Do you know my song?" And she was like, "Am I a person?" But then again, her fans don't know the song, so.
Yeah, but she came from Broadway.
Yeah,
you know, and she became a pop star. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the other way around, and. If you look at most of the performers that we look at and we see, most of them started on stage before they did anything else.
Yeah.
But what's funny is that a lot of people leave the stage because they get bigger success other places. Mm-hmm. But the bigger success is actually less work.
Yeah.
Which is funny. You know what it I is. Mean? Like,
no, I understand that, though.
You make more money and you get more fame for less work, you know, And I'm sure people will comment and say, well, how can you quantify, you know, work when these people are doing their job? I'm not talking about the fact that they wrote an album.
Right.
Because they didn't write the whole album. And I'll tell you that 100%. If you think Ariana writes her music, that's very funny. That's very funny. She might help with a word or two, but no, that's not her strength.
I feel like I agree with you more about the acting side. I don't know exactly, because there's like when the bands tour and stuff like that, you know, they're out there grueling however many dates and all that kind of stuff. TV shows or movies, you know, you shoot maybe like a scene a day or something. And it is a long day, but I agree with you. It's much less. And it's not as hard because if you flub the line, they go cut, do it again. As opposed to flubbing the line on the stage.
I'm going to tell you something right now. If you told me that I had to take a plane to each one of my locations, hop backstage in a limo, and show up and perform for 40,000 people twice a week,
I mean, yes, work? That's, oh, you're right. I know, I'm, so hard.
Oh, and I make how many millions? Oh, yeah, no, that's... Here's what I'm going to say. We bust our ass for 8 shows a week.
Yeah.
We get bare minimum. We get some benefits. We get no recognition. And we do it because we want to tell stories. Mm-hmm. We're not doing it to get anything else. It's really not.
Yeah.
The people that do it to get something else, that's they right. they go away.
Exactly.
Because they burn out. And then they come back.
Right.
And they're like, oh, no, I want to be on Broadway again.
Listen, evolving. I'm not saying that you guys don't work hard. I know.
People are going to be so mad about this podcast. Who does this guy think he is? I think everybody is a very hard worker. So this is just one person's opinion, y'all. One person's opinion.
But I fully agree with you that like a Broadway like ensemble member works more than like Ariana Grande, for example.
Well, it can. I mean, yeah. Take for example, I went from being a lead to being an ensemble member. So I went from being a lead in West Side to being a feature, mm-hmm. a featured ensemble member and an understudy. And I have continued to be a featured ensemble member and an understudy. Now I'm a standby. So now I am a principal,
mm-hmm.
but I'm still a standby. I'm still an understudy. I'm good enough to play everybody else, but apparently I'm not good enough for one role. Which really what that boils down to is I'm more useful to them because I can do more things than what that one person can do. And so I take that as a compliment,
mm-hmm.
but also that means I'll never not work if that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
But if I want to step forward and if I want to become something else, or if I want to do more work or do less work for more money in a different capacity, I would have to turn work down. It's a reality. And if any person in this industry doesn't see that and thinks that I'm crazy for saying that, then do some research. Like, just open your eyes, because it's not about the work that they're doing on their role. It's about the actual hours and time that you put into it and what you're receiving back. That's it.
Well, that's, I mean, it's not just this industry though either. Because, like, if you think about it, teachers only get paid for X amount of hours a day, but they go home and they grade papers, they go home and they make lesson plans, they go home and do all these things on their own time. 100%. And, like, principals don't do that, and they get paid more than the teacher does. So that's just the world, unfortunately, which sucks.
But we're talking about two different things, because you're talking about hierarchy. So yes, so in production, right, the director is supposed to make more than the actor.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or vice versa. Like, the producer, the person who is at the head, is supposed to just collect after they put the money in. Like, the principal, after they've done all of that, that is their job. They are the overseer of that person. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the difference between a professor, right, at a college who has tenure, and a professor at a college who doesn't, because a professor at a college decided to go to this college.
Right.
And he has that degree, or whatever the case may be. It doesn't really work when we cross breed it across business, because the entertainment industry, when it comes down to it, is bracketed in three different forms, right? It's theatrical, commercial, and then music.
So
the commercial brackets everything that's like the print industry and gosh, everything else. And then, why are we talking about this? I went down a rabbit hole, and now I'm like explaining brackets of this industry. But
we went down here when you said that Ariana started on Broadway. Do you? Yeah. There are so many artists who do it like the other way. Like, we actually, so I have three podcasts now. One of them that I just started is about 90s, 2000s pop. I have that with my best friend that I've known since we were like 12.
Sure.
And we just did an episode about pop artists who went to Broadway. Like, you know, there was a Backstreet Boy in Chicago. Joey from NSYNC did Rent. Brandy, everybody's done Chicago. Everyone's done Chicago and everyone's done Rent. But do you have any opinions about when they do it that way?
100%. I have opinions about everything. If I didn't, I wouldn't be human. I think that's a reality. I think you don't have to agree with them, but I have them. And I don't have to agree with yours, but you have them. And that's, I acknowledge that. And that's human. And that is your right as a human being on this earth, in this country, in this land. But when it comes down to that, this is my opinion. I think that if they can do the job, they should get it. Mm-hmm. I think the best person for the job should get the job. I understand you trying to get some money and to kind of paper the, stack the roster, if you will. And I think that's fine. It is what it is. It's a business. This is a business at the end of the day. It's a business. And we, as much as we want to say talent should succeed, it's not going to. It's a business. Sorry, kids. not all the time. There are still some people with integrity that will only hire talent and do it that way. Other times, people want a look. They want a feel. They want gold status. They want status or Instagram followers. And for me, that I think it's hysterical, and I think it's a slippery slope, and I think it takes the beauty out of the work for me. But I also think that our industry needs it in this time and age. It's got to evolve. We've got to evolve. You know, we've got.
Do you consider it stunt casting? Like, would you?
100%. Okay. Well, this is what I said. If they can do the job, they should get it.
Yeah.
That's it. Period. If you can do the job, it should be fucking yours, right? If you go through the process, they ask you to do it. You guys come to an agreement, and you want to do it. Great. Awesome. Of course, it's stacking the roster. Of course, it's like. But you got to look at this. I'm a numbers guy, too. So I look at this when it comes to business. I have my own opinions and my feelings and all of that. But at the end of the day, I have numbers, which is a reality. Let's say I'm paying $20 million for a musical to be put up.
Okay.
I'm paying $20 million of my money of a show that I don't know is going to run. I'm talking about a new show. Mm-hmm. Show that I don't know is going to run. I believe in it. I like it. Some of the audiences like it, but we don't know. I've got two people. I've got somebody who's, oh my God, they're incredible, but they don't have the status that mm-hmm. this other person, who is also good, not incredible, but good, and can do the role well. Mm-hmm. Not going to win any awards, not going to transcend the show into the next idea that it could be, but they're good, and the director can get them to be even better. Right? But they're going to fill the seats every fucking night. Mm-hmm. Who are you going to cast?
Right. It makes sense. It's unfortunate because...
It's unfortunate. We're missing out on some really beautiful stories being told in some incredible ways by actors who can do it so much different.
Yes. Well, it's the same. It's kind of like Broadway. It's a little different because sometimes it's a Broadway name versus like an A-list celebrity. But like when films, like when Broadway musicals get turned into film, and instead of casting people who would do an amazing job or perhaps did it on Broadway, they go for a mediocre singer who is well known, like in Hollywood. And that sucks. But when we're doing this discussion about the Broadway, like the pop stars who have been on Broadway.
Or they go with a Broadway singer who doesn't know how to be on camera and looks like a fool. And then gives us too. A bad rep. So it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that we don't have enough people to because at that person, you're casting a Broadway person who has a status rather than actually looking for the right Broadway person to right. do your job. So it crosses genres. The people who go from Broadway show to TV show, most of their first seasons suck
yeah.
because they never did the work.
Right.
And then they get better, right? I'm not saying that's everybody, y'all. I'm just saying that most people who don't know a skill, they have to learn it. They're For not sure. just blessed with that. So, but the fact that they had status on Broadway got them mm-hmm. the role that they are doing on TV and film.
Yeah.
Because before that, before they had that show or they had that role, CBS wasn't looking at them.
Right.
NBC wasn't looking at them. Fox wasn't looking at them. FX wasn't looking at them. Showtime wasn't looking. Not one network was looking at that person at all until they did that show and they got some type of status.
Right.
And they were like, oh, something. And now at least they have clout to be called in.
Yeah.
So it goes both ways. Both TV and film do the same thing that Broadway does because it's a money industry. And at the end of the day, you have to learn how to be okay with that.
Yeah.
And you have to learn how to find the shows, the jobs, and the things that have integrity for you. And that's it. They have the message that you want to put out in the world. They have the integrity that they uphold the integrity that you want to keep in your heart and your soul and your spirit. And then they allow you to move and evolve into whomever you're going to be, into the best version of whomever you're going to be. Mic drop. That's the end of this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for coming by. That'll be all for me. See you soon, ladies and gentlemen.
Listen, you're dropping some bombs, though. You are. Now,
I really do believe that, though. And that is a wholehearted thing. I think that both industries, the TV and film industry and the Broadway industry and the music industry, all three, I think that it's just skewed. We've gotten to a point where money equals more than message. And I think that is bullshit.
Yeah. You said that you are always, like, with the roles that you play now, you always have a job, you'll always be working, etc. Do you want to go back to leading man? Like, do you want the starring role? Do you want...
I wasn't going to take company because I thought I was good enough to play the role. Mm. And I figured if I'm good enough to understudy five of them, why am I not good enough to play one? And so, but I wasn't called in for the initial company audition process. I was never seen. So my dad died in December and company had called me in and I had pushed them away for a while. Mm-hmm. They had called, this is the third time they called and they go, are you sure? And I was burying my dad and I go, yes, I'm sure. I'm burying my father right now. And my agent called me on Monday and my dad died on Sunday. My agent called me on Monday and he goes, I really hate to call you with this. And he goes, but they have called me again and they've asked, like, would you be interested? And they go, my agent goes, I have never, ever in my entire life had casting call and ask if I was interested to come for an audition 4 times. And I was like, all right, fine. I was like, listen, tell this. If I get back this week, I'll go in. If I don't, I'm dealing with my dad. And that's the bottom line. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he goes, that's fair. And so then I ended up, after burying him on Wednesday, I flew back on Thursday morning and I sat down on my couch and I texted my agents, and it was about 3 o'clock. And I texted my agents and I go, I took a deep breath and I was like, take a shower and go. And so I texted them. I said, would they see me today if I could come in? I'm in the city and I'll come in. 5 minutes later, they said, if he's here by 6, we'll see him.
Wow.
Anytime. So I
clearly that was where you were supposed to go.
Yeah, and I'm always convinced of that. And I'm a Christian. So like my whole thing is like the God. So I always relate my stuff back to like my moral compass has been guided without my understanding anyways, even though I've had a choice. So my choice could have been not to show up to that audition.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wouldn't have had this job, and I wouldn't have been able to understand the beauty of this show in such a revelation. I mean, it truly. And, you know, I'm at a place now where I took Tootsie only because I thought that there was going to be more for me to do. When the understanding of the contract happened, there were other features that were happening in the show that had gotten cut by the time we got to Chicago. Yeah. And then, so I thought, of course, well, they'll put them back in. They said they were only temporary. We get back to New York and still, nothing. So I was like, okay, you know, and it's life. So we just got to take it and roll with it. And I had two options. I could let my ego get involved and be like, oh, this sucks, this is bullshit. I'm the lead. That's not it. Because if we can't be ensemble members, we can't be leaders. If you don't know how to be part of the whole, you'll never be able to be the one to lead the whole to the fucking place. Like, that's not it. A shepherd sleeps with his lambs, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
The person who's taking them where they got to go, he sleeps right there. It's not the other way around. So I always say, like, if I want to be a lead, I have to learn how to be the best ensemble member I can be. Because that person, that idea, that fundamental part of a show is the ensemble. They work harder than everybody else. They get paid less. They've got to show up and do longer hours. They rehearse more. You know, they don't get to normally walk the carpets and do all the things, the events, you know. They don't get the extra things. Sometimes the producers don't even know their fucking names. So... Wow. So that's a reality, right? That's a reality. But for me, what I had to do was I go, I'm going to be the best fucking human I can be. And it's not about status for me, because I'm an equal human being. They might not treat me as such, but I am, and I know my value. So I laid down every night very, very happy. And that company was amazing. Everybody in that company was really great. So it wasn't like a bad apple. So it was a good company to be in, and I loved working with those people, every single one of them.
Depending on how long this goes, do you intend to return to company, or are you gonna look for?
I hope to return to company. I mean, I hope that the show comes back. You know what I mean? I mean, technically, I still have a contract? Question mark. but you know. I would love to see those stories told. I've already been on. I went on twice. So I thought that was really cool. I was like, dope.
I saw it like as you were like probably getting on stage, you know? So I wasn't able to like jump into a cab or something and head into Manhattan. I got to see you in the lead in Tootsie. That, well, not as Tootsie, but
Max.
That was a lot of fun. I really loved that show.
It's a good show. I thought it
was really fun. It surprised me.
It's sad. It's sad. It's sad at how it. It's sad. It's sad the journey of that show. But this would have closed it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We would have been dead.
It would have. But because I saw it twice. I saw it once just, I want to say right after opening.
Sure.
I won lottery. You saw me. Yeah. I was sitting in the front row.
Yeah. I remember.
And I was right there. I was so happy at, like, because I went in, like, no expectation. I was like, I don't even know if I want to see this. I know some people in the cast, so that's great. And I'll go, whatever. Sure. I don't really turn down going to see shows. Like, oh, hey, you want to buy a $40 ticket? Yes, I do.
As a matter of fact. Yeah.
But I laughed so hard. I had such a good time. And then when you were doing that week that you got to play, I made sure to go back. How do you feel about the controversy about that show? Because I felt like it was kind of unfounded.
It's not unfounded.
Really?
Any person has the right to feel whatever they feel. And any person has the right to allow something to affect them any way that it does.
You're right.
That is their right.
And that is fair.
I validate every feeling that people have. What I do for me is I have to say this. If things happened that triggered people, if things happened that affected people to the extent that they wanted it gone, I am so sorry that hurt you so bad. And that is a really hard, lonely, bad place to be. And something should never affect you that way. So for me, my heart and deepest sympathy goes out to people who felt that Tootsie brought those feelings and emotions up for them. Now I'm going to speak to the other hive. And the other hive are the people who have no stake in what these people were talking about and what these feelings that these people had, because they cannot relate. They are not the same person, and they do not walk the same life. So for them to jump on a bandwagon and then to say things like boycott, or to say things like that we're a transphobic show, are actually untrue.
Yeah. So that's where I'm coming from when I said unfounded. I agree with you. People can feel how they feel, and they have a right 100%. To.
Yeah.
What I mean by what I said, though, is I did not take it as any kind of malicious, intentional, joking, you know, or hatred. Like, I didn't get that message from the show at all.
Most people didn't.
Okay.
Because it's not a transphobic show. We're not. Dorothy Michaels is not. I mean, Michael Dorsey is not trans. He doesn't identify as trans. He doesn't even identify as a crossdresser.
Right.
Well, at all. He is simply, in fact, if anything, the feminist movement should have gotten on board with this one and been like, what's going on? But none of them did, because that too was not the story that we were telling. Right. See, people need a platform to feel things so that their feelings are validated. But they don't want to do the research to understand where feelings fucking come from. So for someone to have a feeling that is real, right? Mm-hmm. However they feel that is real, whether or not they did the research, they saw the show, whether or not they heard the album, which is where all these things came from, and then didn't see the show, and then after being reached out, didn't see the show again, that's where I take offense. Because if you are so unwilling to see where someone else is coming from, then you're the problem, actually.
Yep. I completely agree with you.
A debate is not, I'm wrong, you're right. Mm-hmm. That's not a debate. And that's not winning a debate. Winning a debate is allowing someone, guiding someone through your own personal ideals and being convicted in your ideals enough to be able to articulate them properly, articulately, accurately, and historically. So if you have facts that are backed up and you can present these in a way that do not demonize or attack someone else and someone else's beliefs and their system of ethics, code of ethics, then that's a beautiful thing. And then they can also say, you know what? I don't actually agree with you, but I see where you're coming from. And I actually understand how that for you can work. I get it. That to me is communication. That to me is a debate. That is an idyllic way of moving through life. So for me, when somebody says, no, I'm not going to see your show, it's transphobic.
Yeah.
Wait, you haven't seen the show? No, I listened to the album and I know what it is. What? What?
If I listened to any album and then made a judgment call on that and then went and saw the story or read a book, and you know, whatever, like,
yeah, I've never understood how does Broadway that make sense? Fans who don't, like, haven't seen, and I get why they haven't seen it. It's not accessible to everybody. I understand theater is expensive, theater doesn't necessarily tour, whatever, but you can't form a full opinion about a show if you haven't seen it, if you've only heard an album. And even no, you can't. You can't at all. And so many can't. Do.
Well,
I mean, for me personally, like, I really love the music from Dear Evan Hansen. I'm not a fan of the show. And like, I saw it and I'm good not to ever see it again.
Did they write the show too?
Yeah. There's another person, but yeah. Pasek and Paul.
They wrote the book as well.
Yeah. I think they have additional, but they're part of the writing as well. I take issue with the fact that it doesn't seem like Evan is punished for his actions.
Never seen the show.
Interesting.
I don't see a lot of theater. I'll tell you why.
Well, because you're in it. So you can. Because
I'm in it. And I'm in it. And if there's something that I'm dying to see or a friend of mine is in the show, mm-hmm. and it's like, I will see it. But yeah. Other than that, I support in so many ways this community that going to see theater on my one night off just doesn't seem healthy to me.
I totally get that. That makes a lot of sense.
And I don't hang out with theater people. Like, I love you all. I love you all so much. But I don't hang out with you because I got my own stuff to deal with. And I'm working towards evolving and changing that and growing. And a lot of theater people and people in general nowadays just want to sit around and talk. You know, they don't want to talk about anything specifically. They just want to talk. Whether it's talking shit about somebody else or talking shit about themselves, they just want to talk. And I want to understand why we feel like we have to do that. So mm-hmm. I always want to go a little bit deeper. And people are always like, what? Why? So I try to surround myself with people who, you know, really want to do the work. And you know, I have found that a lot of those people are outside the community that I live in and I work in. And that's okay, I think.
All right, so this has been so much. I want to do like a couple of just rapid fire quick answers.
Go.
Okay? Go. Favorite role that you've had?
Riff, hands down.
Cool. Favorite show you've been in?
Damn it. I always say the show I'm in now because that's paying my bills, but this one's not paying my bills anymore, so I guess I don't have to say anything. My favorite show that I've been in, I think, would be Newsies. That was just it really was. It was a dream role of mine to do, and they didn't let me do it on Broadway, so I got to do it here.
Dream role you've never done, but want to?
Jesus or Judas. Jesus and Judas in Superstar, and also the one that's not written.
There you go. You said you have three shows you've done. So which one would you want, like, which one's the one that you're gunning for if you could have it produced?
Fork in the Road.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite spot that you go to in the theater, like place after work to wind down?
Yeah, my house. My house.
Do you have a favorite Hold bar? Fast, though, baby. Do you have a favorite restaurant?
House of Brews and Hold Fast are my two watering holes. So I go there. And then Añejo, my tacos and my margaritas. We're on 10th Avenue and 47th. Shout out. What?
Oh my God. I think I went there before a show a couple months ago now. God.
Ladies and gents, they're still open during the days. You can walk by and they'll serve you out their window. favorite place. I have a place on the West Side Highway that I go and I kind of just like sit and think for a while.
Okay, Sondheim or Weber? I have a theory that you can't passionately love both. You have a favorite. Everyone's got one that they prefer.
I think that's very untrue.
Really?
Yeah. I think that there's one that's more pleasing to your ear when you're feeling it a specific way and in a specific time, but I don't think that's it. I think that when you understand both mm-hmm. of them, there is no way you can pick a favorite. I think that because Sondheim does things that are not as mainstream, if you will. Like AL Dubs, like he can hit a melody that you'll
you
be
just
like
called oh. him AL Dubs.
Oh yeah,
I love you.
he'll hit a melody that you'll remember, and it'll hit you like it'll hit you in the chest, and you just kind of feel it. You know, it like takes your arm. But Sondheim, S squared, if you will, you have to think about it, and then you have to apply it. And once you do both of those things, it'll put you on the floor. But it doesn't invite you necessarily to do that. And I think that's what's cool about it, is because the music is juxtapositional with the vocal. And so you're hearing things that your ear wouldn't normally hear in a melodic structure. So tonality-wise, like, I feel like Sondheim isn't as pleasing necessarily as Andrew Lloyd Webber's is, but they both hold the levity because of what they actually do. And mm-hmm. and my hat is off to both Andrew and to Steve for their composition and how they can write and their own versions of writing. But I think as far as A.L. Dubs writes epic pieces, right? They're these big, massive things that are story or this or that. And Sondheim writes these kind of epic in their own way. It's like the underground theater. You know what I mean? It's like that theater that's like somebody told you about, and so mm-hmm. like you showed up to a loft space and you saw it and you were like, oh shit, this transforms, man. Like, this is amazing. I don't know what I just saw, but that was amazing. And then you think about it and you're like, wow, I look at life differently because of that. You know?
Yeah.
And Andrew's is immediate. Steve's is a little bit more contemplative, I think, if that's the way that I would put it.
That's good. I've had...
Because Steve writes most of his lyrics.
Yeah.
Andrew doesn't.
I know.
So that's why I was saying, like, Andrew's, his music takes you on this, like, turn your face away from the... You know, like, you want
to soar. And please feel free to keep singing.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like... Me as the Phantom, that would be so funny.
Would you want to be the Phantom, though?
I would love to play Eric. It would be a blast.
Now, would you like to play him in Phantom or in Love Never Dies or both?
I would much rather sing a concert of Love Never Dies and do Phantom on Phantom. Hmm.
Well, okay. I'm going to let you get going. Do you want to tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me at johnarthurgreenmusic.com or you can find me on John Arthur Green on Instagram. You can find me John Arthur G on the Twitter. And
yeah. You can find him on, what is it, 46th Street, if the theater ever opens it?
Find me on 45th Street. Yeah, at the Jacobs Theater. And I'm on iTunes. So you can buy my music on my website or iTunes or any streaming network that is out there, Spotify and YouTube as well. And amazing. My music videos are out there, so go check them out.
Thank you so much for this.
Thank you for this.
Hey, me again. How did you like that interview? I really hope that you did. I had a great time talking to John. John, thank you again so much for doing the show and for sharing all of your thoughts that you had during that conversation. If you enjoyed that, please give John a follow. Go check him out. He's John Arthur G on Twitter. He's John Arthur Green on Instagram. Google him. He's fantastic. And, you know, when you can, go see him in company, because I'm personally going to be one of the first people through there once everything goes back to normal. I was hoping to see it before. So anyway, please take a second to make sure you're subscribed on your preferred platform. Side B the podcast is available on all of them. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, iHeart. There's so many platforms that you can access this show on. And you can take it with you wherever you want to go. It's great like that. Yay, technology. So, also, I would really appreciate it if you could take a second and hit the rate review button on Apple Podcasts, because that way you'll be able to help me reach a wider audience. I just found out what the, like, good, quote-unquote, podcast like performances are, and I have 3 podcasts that I'm running right now, and I love doing them, and I'm actually very happy that quarantine has given me the opportunity to really work more on them. But I'm not reaching the numbers that it says that like 30% of podcasts or whatever are, and like that's how you can gauge how successful you are. My numbers are nowhere near. So if you could tell a friend, especially if you are into like the New York City scene, like music or Broadway, that would be great. And if not, you can check out Radio Mickey if you're a Disney fan. Radio Mickey is one of my podcasts, and What's the Deal with This Pop Life is our other one. It's the newest one that I'm doing with my oldest friend, Stephanie McLeod. She and I have been friends since we were like 12 years old, and we started a pop podcast, and I love doing that one too. So I really love all of them. I enjoy that I have this one, and this is, you know, the oldest and the first one. It was my radio show that I converted. And also, fun fact, it's been a podcast for over a year now. So it has not been consistent for a year. That started around October/November. But I started it, I converted it back in May of 2019. So happy anniversary, Side B, the podcast. Yeah, so I hope everybody's doing well. I'm great. I have been dieting, I've been blogging, I've been talking to my therapist, I've been podcasting, I've been researching for podcasts. Like, it's not just, hey, let's talk about this for an hour. It's really, we've been putting a lot of work into these things, so I feel great about it. And I'm working on, I don't know how to publish it, and I started it yesterday. I started writing about this whole fat empowerment movement, and I can, as a fat person, I'm allowed to say these things. I'm a big girl. I am overweight. I am dieting. I've lost a pretty decent amount of weight during quarantine, but I have a lot of feelings about this whole movement on the internet, and I don't want to get into them on here because I don't want to be like misquoted or anything, but I wrote some of it in a blog on the diet website that I've been using, and I asked my friend, and she agrees with me that I should like flesh it out a little more and really dive into it. And I don't know what platform to publish it on, but man, I want to. So you can follow me on social media, and maybe you'll find a link to this piece that I'm trying to write. I have a lot of feelings about it, and I want to share them. So yeah. But my social media on Twitter, you can find me at Side B Radio. On Instagram, you can find me at Side B Podcast. Facebook is facebook.com/SideBRadio. My personal Twitter handle is I'm Steph Walsh. That's my handle for everything. Venmo too. I mean, you know, feel free. But you know, hit me up. Let me know what you thought of this. Let John Arthur Green, let him know what you thought of this. And I will talk to you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening. Be safe. Don't do anything stupid.